So there was a request that we speak a little bit about Shvi'it, about the laws of Shemitah. So what I'm going to try to do is give a little bit of an introduction, and then maybe we'll break it down into different subcategories and topics, and if you have any questions, you'll be able to ask. I don't see Aaron here, because he was the one who wanted me to talk about Shvi'it, so it's like funny if he's not here.
Is he there? There he is.
Okay. So we're going to talk about Shemitah. That was your request.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll talk about that real quick.
All right. So we'll start just with the Chumash, so we know what we're talking about. The laws of Shviyah divide into two parts. There are two mitzvahs of Shviyahs. One is what's called Shmitat Karkaot, that refers to the land itself. And then it's called Shmitas Ksofin, which means that all the debts are cancelled. So we'll start with Shmitat Karkaot, and it appears twice in the Torah. Once in Sefer Shmot, in Parashas Mishpatim, and there it says, "V'shei shanim tizra et artzecha." So for 6 years out of the cycle of seven, you plant. V'asafta tvuata, and you harvest. V'ashviyit tishmetena unetashta. But on the seventh year, you resist and you desist from all these melachot. So what's the purpose? The Torah says, "V'achlu evyanei amecha." So that the poor of your people can come in and they can eat from your produce. So it means that if let's say a person would lock his field up in such a way that the aniyim can't come in and take, then he would have completely undermined the whole mitzvah of Shviyas. Because the goal of Shviyas is to let the aniyim come in, the poor people, once in 7 years, and therefore the status of your produce is hefker. You don't own it. Now, it could be that you're allowed to harvest that which you need for your family. You know, the barest minimum. We're not saying that the owner of the field has to starve. But to go through a normal harvest, in which he cuts off all the produce of the field on the seventh year and takes it for himself, and then we're going to soon see that there's a prohibition against selling it on the market. That's where the concept, if you've heard of Otzer Bezdin, comes in, to avoid the Iser of Mechira B'Perish, what's called Schora B'Perish Shviyas. So that's all in Parashas Mishpatim. Then the Torah again, at the end of Sefer Vayikra, repeats the mitzvah of Shemitah, but here the Torah gets into much more detail. Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yamarta aleim ki tavo el ha'aretz asher ani noten lachem. So obviously, if we classify the mitzvahs of the Torah into two different classes, there's two different categories. There's mitzvahs atluyos ba'aretz and mitzvahs she'enam tluyos ba'aretz. Where would you classify Shviyas? Tluyos ba'aretz ki tavo el ha'aretz. That's the precondition. It's not going to apply to chutz la'aretz. Now, there are lands, areas which are called artzot ha'smuchot le'aretz Yisrael. For example, back in the Gemara's time, there was an area called Aram Tzova, which is where Syria is located today. So that, on a Drabbanan level, is considered part of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, even though it's not under Jewish sovereignty, it would still have the status of Eretz Yisrael. Now, what the status of Eretz Yisrael, and what are the bounds of Eretz Yisrael, and how does this all apply to Shviyat Bizman Hazeh? In other words, is Shviyat, in our time, a biblical requirement? That depends on a gigantic sugyan gittin, which is called Kidshal Ashayt of a Kidshal Asid Lavo, or Kidshal Ashayt of a Low Kidshal Asid Lavo. So, for example, the Rama paskins that kidshul shaita v'kidshul asilav means the kiddush of Eretz Yisrael on the part of Ezra and Nehemiah, the Second Commonwealth, is kidshul shaita v'kidshul asilav. Now, it's even after we went into Galut, that sanctity of the land of Israel, as far as the mitzvot atlus parts, is still intact. It's still activated. That would seem to lead us to the conclusion, therefore, that at least according to the Rambam, Shviyas in our time should be Doraita, which means that if we have any doubts, we have to be very, very careful about Shviyas. So I'm just mentioning that at the outset. There seems to be another Rambam which links up Shviyas to a different mitzvah, which is the mitzvah of Yovel. You know, every 50 years we have a Yovel, and the Gemara establishes in Gittin that Yovel depends upon Yoshevel Aleha. In other words, it's not enough that the Jewish people have control over the land of Israel, but we have to have all the Jews living in Israel, which is really something for Yemos HaMashiach. I mean, the way things are going lately, especially in France, I don't know, we may be coming very close. But be that as it may, We're not sure whether Shvius Bisman is Doraisa Darbonan. I'm just mentioning that at the outset because that we're going to have to talk about that later. The Torah then goes on to say, Vishovsa Ha'aretz Shabbos Lashem. What does that sound like to you if you take the Torah literally? Who is commanded to rest?
The land.
The land itself. It says Vishavta Ha'aretz. So this is going to be very relevant for those who, you know, farmers who have what's called irrigation systems in which they set it up with a clock. You know, now we have a Shvius clock, not just a Shabbos clock, which means that, let's say, a week from now, right before Rosh Hashanah, as we, before we enter into the Lev Shemitah, we can set up a clock that will irrigate our fields on Shvius. Would that be allowed? So here the Torah says, "V'shavta haaretz." So if I set up a system in which the land is actually working, I violate this mitzvah of v'shavta haaretz. And believe it or not, there's a whole slew of poskim who are very opposed to setting up any sort of automated system that will activate the field during the Shavuot. Then the Torah says again, "Sheishanim tizra sadecha, sheishanim tizmar karmecha." Now the Torah introduces another malacha, which is called zmira. In English, zmir is called pruning. You know that sometimes on the tree, if you don't prune the tree, it won't reach its maximum produce. So the Torah classifies pruning as one of the things that are allowed for 6 years, but not during the seventh year. And then the Torah, in addition to zriya and zimur, adds the asafta tvuata, that you should harvest your crop, but b'shana shviyas, shabbat, shabbaton. And the Gemara is going to dash on why the double language Shabbat Shabbaton, but be that as it may, on the seventh year, all these malachot, all these activities are prohibited.
So this year, cutting schach would be like pruning?
I don't think so. I think pruning is when you cause the tree to grow faster. So I don't know if you have such a case, you know, where causing your tree to grow faster would be a problem, you know. It would be under the Issur of pruning. Now the Torah goes on to introduce another concept, which is called Svichin. I don't know if anyone here has heard of Svichin. That's a very heavy issue, exactly what the status of Svichin is. So I'm going to leave that deliberately for later, because we have to know a lot of things before we can analyze what Svichin is. In any event, it says, V'hayta Shabbat ha'aretz lachem lo'achla. So the purpose is to eat the fruits of Shvi'it. And that's what's called Kiddushat Peirot Shvi'it. When I say Peirot, I don't mean to exclude grains. The law of Shvi'it applies to three basic categories that make up Zeroyim, the entire complex of Zeroyim. Number one applies to the Chameshes Minei Dagon, that's grains. Number two applies to Peirot Sa'ilon, the fruits of the tree. And number three applies to what's called Yerokos and Kitnios, which means vegetables and legumes. The practical issues of Shvi'is are going to begin right after Rosh Hashanah with regard to Yerokos, with regard to vegetables. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
So rice isn't under the category?
Rice is not prohibited under the law of Shvi'is because it doesn't fit neither under the five species of grains, nor under Peros HaIlon, nor is it a vegetable.
You can sleep well tonight.
Yeah.
Okay. Sfaradim are always talking about rice. That's all they talk about. And we're there jealous. Okay, fine. So Vaita Shabbat Lachem Li'achla. La'achla v'lo l'schora, the Gemara says. It's not meant for business purposes. So when you realize it, it means that 1 out of 7 years, the farmer's out of business. And not only that, the payroll's a hefker, anyone could come in and take them. Again, the farmer could be very machpid about how they go in and take them. If, for example, the aniyim are damaging his property, he has rights to protect his property. The Torah doesn't require him to give up his property. The hefker here is on the payrolls of his property. So there's going to have to be an organized system, which the Gemara organizes, as to how the aniyim could take the fruits without undermining the without destroying the field itself. Now, when we talk about payrolls of Elon, we're talking about fruit trees. Like, take, for example, grapes and olives. Grapes and olives are your classical case of fruit trees. Grapes, of course, grow on what? A vine, right? A kerem. And that's what the Torah specifically spells out over here. Tizmar karmacha, for 6 years you're allowed to be zomer your kerem, but not in the seventh year. Now, it's interesting that Chazal see in the seventh year not just the year for on the benefit of the poor people, but it's also to benefit the owners of the field, what are they meant to do during this year? Are they twiddling their thumbs?
Learning.
Exactly. It was meant, and that's what it was back in the day, as a year dedicated to the study of Torah. It was sort of like, if you know the phrase, a Yarche Kala, but a Yarche Kala usually takes place for a month out of the year. Here it was an entire year that was dedicated to Torah study. So there are many different elements to Shavuos. You know, there's a benefit for the Aniyim, of course, first and foremost, and that's explicit in the Torah. The Shavsa Ha'aretz, you know, many people have written about the fact that from an agrarian perspective, the land regains its ability to produce. And the third people are the owners of the field are meant to gain from this. But of course, Chazal see in the Shmirat HaShviyit, in the observance of Shviyit, a great, great challenge. In fact, Chazal compares Shomrei Shviyit to Malachi Asharis. They have total reliance on Hashem, because the Torah is going to say, as we'll soon see, Vitziviti et Birchati, that God commands the bracha that's going to come down and guarantees that the farmers won't lose anything. You have to have a real emunah over here. This is faith of the first degree. You know, you're talking about believing in a bracha. And we're not going to a Rebbe for a bracha here. We're going to Hashem Himself. And then it says, L'chol avdechol amatecha l'schircho l'toshavcha garibimcha. Imagine you have this worker who's been working for 6 years, comes the seventh year, and he's collecting the fruits. So it's an interesting psychology. So that's all at the end of Sefer Vayikra. In Parshas Re'eh and Sefer Dvarim, we have a totally different mitzvah of Shemitah, and that is what's called Shemitat Ksafim. Miket Sheva Shanim Taseh Shemitah, Zedvar Shemitah Shamot. Shamot literally means to open your hands, to release that which you're holding on to. It's called Shemot. Kol Baal Mashe Yado, in other words, if I'm a Masha, means that you owe me money, I have to open my hands and let go of the debt. Lo Yigo Ses Re'eu, he's not allowed to force his friend to collect the debt. We'll see later on that if the friend wants to pay him the debt, he can do so out of the goodness of his heart. Ki Karash Shemitah Hashem, the seventh year is called Shemitah. Okay, I'm going to take a break now and ask are there any questions that come to your mind, because there's so much here to cover. Yeah, I have this. I brought in two svarim that I collected here. One is called Dinei Shviyit. It's kind of like a synopsis of the laws of Shviyit. At the end of the book, it has actually charts from the last Shemitah, but the dates are pretty similar this year as well, as to when you have a problem with which fruit and which grain and so forth and so on. And in addition to that, he has a whole section here about Prusbul, which is the document that we sign and we give to the Beit Din in order to circumvent the law of Shemitas Ksofim. And then I brought in another sefer called Mishmeret Hashvi'it, Hilchot Shemitah. And this is a much more extensive, the footnotes here, are for scholars only. You can probably spend years just going through the sefer. Yo Shvi'it is a Masecht in Shas. And it's got a lot of stuff in it. So maybe I would just to know what's on your mind, so before we get into this.
Yeah, could I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
You said that it's for the Anim. So, but anyone could go to the field and
take? Anyone can take. Yeah, anyone can take. It's not exclusively for the Anim, but the Torah does say that the ultimate goal is for the Anim. Nielsen?
I've got so many questions, I don't know.
You don't know where to start. Okay.
Asha, maybe it's a question for you. Asha, company. What are we doing?
Max wants to know if every Glad employee can take off for a year.
He can, but he won't get paid. Yeah. It's purely his choice.
Is ELT have a room that she can call
up? It's interesting. One of the practical issues in Shemitah that's coming around the bend, as I mentioned before, is vegetables. So with regard to vegetables, The standard law of Zeroyim is Lakita. Lakita means that, and this makes vegetables very unique, Yerakot, is that in terms of the cycle of 7 years, you want to define which year this particular produce belongs to. In other words, how do I define that it belongs to the Shemitah year? With regard to Yerakos, even if I planted the Yerakos in the sixth year, but Azlina Basa Lakita means that the moment that I harvest my vegetables, and that's in the seventh year in this case, it becomes sanctified with Kedusha Shviyas. And if it's sanctified with Kedusha Shviyas, it means, number one, that the owner of the field is not allowed to protect and prevent me from coming in and taking those vegetables. Number two, it means that the vegetables are endowed with Kedusha Shvius, which means number three, that I have to eat these vegetables. I can't feed them to my animals if they're fit for human consumption, and that's called nitan. Nitan means that every foodstuff has to be dedicated to the highest level that it possibly could be dedicated. So, for example, if my food becomes spoiled, then I feed it to my animals. Even the peels that may have a little bit of the fruit of the basar of the pri on it, they have Kedusha Shvius. Or if you have peels that can be fed to animals, for example, banana peels can be fed to animals, believe it or not. And therefore, it has Kedusha Shvius. Now, if something has Kedusha Shvius, you have to make sure that the nitan is fulfilled, because Kedusha Shvius, according to the Ramban at least, has two dimensions to it. Number one, it has an isur, you're not allowed to sell it, you're not allowed to trample on it, you can't undermine its sanctity. But number two, the Ramban at least maintains that there's a mitzvah of eating the fruits, and if not eating them, then making sure they're consumed according to the nitan, which might mean animal consumption. In the case of besom, it might be using it for smelling. Every single object that grows from the ground, every vegetation, has its use. And when I use it in that proper way, I fulfill the mitzvah of Kedusha Shvius. The sanctity of Shvius engenders an essay, according to the Ramban, of fulfilling and implementing the sanctity of Shvius. Now, let's say, for example, I buy Yerokos from a non-Jew. Okay, this is going to be extremely practical in just 2 weeks' time, right? I want to buy my tomatoes and my potatoes from what's called Yibul Nachri. Now, Yibul Nachri, which is non-Jewish produce, could fall under two different categories. It could come under Arab produce here in the land of Israel, and it could also be import from Chutz Laretz. If it's import from Chutz Laretz, that's Yibul Nachri mi Chutz Laretz, there's no Shvius whatsoever. No laws of Shvius apply according to anybody. Because as we said before, Vishav Saaretz, the law of Kedusha Shvius is Toli Bekarka. On the other hand, Yibul Nachri in Eretz Yisrael is a much more complicated issue. Most poskim say, and I'll say it in the original and then I'll translate it, is Ein Kinyan Akum Lafkia Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, that the ownership of the land on the part of a non-Jew does not have the power to undermine the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. The sanctity of Eretz Yisrael is irrelevant to who owns the field. And if that be the case, then if I have fields that are growing produce here in Eretz Yisrael, even if they're owned by non-Jews, they are sanctified by Kedusha Shvius, and that indeed is the position of most poskim. However, the Rambam paskins yesh kinyan li'akum lafkia mikedushas Eretz Yisrael, means the ownership of a guy would undermine the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael as far as Shvius is concerned. And the question is, who paskins like the Rambam? So in fact, there are two major poskim who accept the shita of the Rambam, and they were both experts in the laws of Zeroyim. One is none other than the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch. Again, he doesn't codify the laws of Shvius or any of Zeroyim in the Shulchan Aruch, but he writes extensively about Zeroyim in his Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam. And he claims that we accept the sheet of the Rambam. This is also codified by the same author in his Beit Yosef. And that's not the only opinion. There's another opinion which is called the Pa'as HaShulchan. And he quotes here in this book that I showed you before, the Pa'as HaShulchan. The Pa'as HaShulchan was a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. I don't know if you know the history of it, but the Vilna Gaon had five, or maybe more than five, major scholar Talmidim who made it to Eretz Yisrael. The Vilna Gaon himself wanted to come to Eretz Yisrael, but he didn't make it. And amongst those five Talmidim, one was called the Pa'as HaShulchan. He was an Ashkenazi. The Beit Yosef was, of course, a Sfaradi. So you have an overlap here of Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. Now, how do we paskin l'maisa? So this is very fascinating. There's what's called the Yishuv HaYashan in the poskim, and what's called the Yishuv HaChadash. The Yishuv HaYashan is basically Yerushalayim. Originally, it was the old city of Yerushalayim, and the area is very close to the old city. But today, it means the entire city of Yerushalayim. All the customs of Yerushalayim are now appropriately accepted by the entire Yerushalayim. So I don't care where you live in Yerushalayim. You can live, for all I care, in Baca, in Rechavia, or in Har Nof, and you will follow the Minhag Yerushalayim. The Minhag Yerushalayim accepted the Sheet of the Rambam, the Kesef Mishnah, and the Pasas Shulchan that there is no Kedusha Shvias in Perush al Nochri, even in Eretz Yisrael. We're not talking about Chutzlots. I told you there's no issue in terms of import from Chutzlots. Then there's something called the Yeshuva Chadash. Does anybody know? There's one city on the face of the map which really is the
Bnei Brak.
Bnei Brak, exactly. Bnei Brak is, you know, it's a funny kind of phrase, you know, Yeshuva Chadash. But what happened is the Jews from Yerushalayim eventually settled in other areas, and especially in Bnei Brak, the final word and the final authority was the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish accepted the opinion of most poskim that the produce of Goyim in Eretz Yisrael has Kedusha Shvias. So if everyone here at the table, I'm not saying necessarily everyone fits this bill, but if we're all shaykh to the Yeshuva Yashan, where the old time is from Yerushalayim, then we can rely on the Heter, the Kesef Mishnah, and so forth, and Peirol Shel Nochri on Mutter. There's no Kedusha Shvias. Now, again, you may not want to give business to the Goyim. That's your own issue. I'm not getting into that political issue.
Is it based on where you live or where you are at the moment when you're eating it?
Where you live. But the only thing is, you might be careful in Bnei Brak because, you know, if it becomes public knowledge that you're violating the local minhag, you may have issues of Marasayan or Lotus Godudu, Agudus, Agudus. That has to be well thought out. But theoretically, if you have the minhag of Yerushalayim, that's your psak, and Perushal Nachri has no Kedusha Shvis. If on the other hand you're in Bnei Brak, you buy vegetables in just 2 weeks' time, assuming that the vegetables were cut down after Rosh Hashanah. They have therefore the sanctity of Shvias. Those vegetables have to be treated with Kedusha Shvias. They have to be eaten. They shouldn't be wasted. They shouldn't be thrown out. Even if they're not edible, they're probably edible for animals. If you've eaten them and you have surplus, then what you're going to have to do is take that surplus and you're going to have to put it in a special place until it gets really rotten. It's so rotten that you couldn't even feed it to an animal. And at that point, you can throw it out in the garbage because it loses its Kedusha Shvias if it's not omed l'klum. It has no nitai. So that's as far as yerakos, as far as vegetables concerned. With regard to fruits on the tree, the issue of Shvias is way down the line, months down the line. And in fact, some of the problems, especially, for example, grapes and wine, will only come after Shvias. You know, you'll have bottles of wine in the 8th year, and the 9th year, and they'll say Kedusha Shvias on it, and that you have to be careful. So where should you buy your vegetables? So I would suggest the following. Look for a Hechsher for the vegetables, because the Hechsher will tell you one of the following possibilities. A, B, or C. The Hechsher will tell you either that the fruits are Yibul Nachri, which means either from Chutzlarts or from Arab produce here, but following the Yeshuva Yashan Psak. Or number two, if it comes from places like Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim, that's called hydroponics, it means that it's not grown in the ground, it's grown in water. And in today's technology, there's a lot of stuff that hits the market, especially vegetables that are grown in water, not in the ground. Or number three, it's something called Otsar Beit. And any one of those three would be included in the Hechsher. There's one fundamental difference, however, between the first two and the third. The first two means that Kedusha Shvias is completely null and void. The third means that you have to be Noe Kedusha Shvias. That none of the violations were violated by the farmers because of this Otzer Bezdin, but it still is the produce of the land during Shvias. Again, we'll talk about vegetables now. And therefore, Otzer Bezdin means you have to treat it with Kedusha Shvias. Now, the odd thing is that sometimes it's very complicated to be Noe Kedusha Shvias with Otzer Bezdin, because in Otzer Bezdin, they tend to give out large volumes of vegetables. For example, they're not going to sell you a pound of potatoes. They'll send you a sack of potatoes. You know, and you'll see later on in the year, when it gets to lemons, for example, which is a classical Shvias case from Peres HaYilon, they're going to sell you a sack of lemons. So in such a case, my advice would be, and I'm not joking, that you get together with your neighbors and decide to give out the lemons. I mean, either you arrange it milchat chila or after you... Because otherwise what's going to happen is lemons don't last very long. Especially if you leave them out of a refrigerator. But you can't take this gigantic sack of lemons I don't know if any, you know, unless maybe Glide has some sort of commercial refrigerator. I don't know. Actually, you don't offer any meals there, so I don't think you have that. But you go to companies that have these, you know, these commercial refrigerators that are the size of this room, or three times the size of this room, you could put it. But for us in our homes, you know, we're going to have a problem with this, these massive amounts. And they start getting ruined. And once they start getting spoiled, you have real serious Shemitah problems as to how to be Noi Kedusha Shemitah. So that's the Otzer Bezdin deal, okay? And as I said, Shvius also applies to grains, Tvua. Grains will become a problem pretty much in the spring and in the summer. You know, we're going to be, the market is going to be flooded with grains that reach what. Now, look, I told you that in the case of Yerokos, Azlin and Basal Lakita, it depends on the moment that you pluck the vegetable out of the ground. With regard to Peros HaElon, and you want to decide whether these fruits belong to Shvius or not, so there the halacha is called Havas Shlish, which is a very complicated. You know, it translates in such a way that people don't have a clue what it's all about. It sounds like it means it's one-third grown, but that's not what it means. I mean, every single fruit, you'd have to be a Bucky and Zeron to know what Havas Shlish is. You probably spend 6 months just figuring out what Havas Shlish is in every single grain, in every single case, fruits and grains and so forth and so forth. But anyway, if the Havas Shlish took place before Shvius, which is a lot of the produce we're going to be getting for months to come, that it can be harvested in the spring, or maybe even towards the end of the winter, that stuff is shishis, it belongs to the sixth year, it has no Kedusha Shvius. But once you have Havas Shlish, in other words, you know, there's going to be grains that'll be growing during the course of the winter, that'll be harvested after the winter, and they have Kedusha Shvius because they did not reach the stage of Havas Shlish during the sixth year, but rather during the seventh year. Good. Now, go ahead.
Is there a problem of not throwing out the vegetable, but obviously placing in a storage bin to run, of non-Kedusha Shvius stuff with the Kedusha Shvius stuff? In other words, if you have something and you're not sure, does that Kedusha Shvius or not, like...
Like you're scraping the whole plate. You're like...
You have a mix of vegetables, or...
I would say put it... Unfortunately, you're going to have to... If you're not careful, you don't know which is very common... You're going to have to put them all away, because it's very interesting. You see, what I didn't discuss with you today, which is a long discussion, but I'll give you the tip of the iceberg, is Shvius in our time d'oraisa or not? So as I told you before, the Rambam paskens that Kedusha Shnia, Kidshel Shait v'Kidshel Asin Lov, that the land has the same identical sanctity as it did at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, when 42,000 Jews came up from the Golah to settle in the land of Israel. So today, the land of Israel has sanctity. The trouble is that from many, many different sources, especially in the Tosefta and Shvius and the Yerushalmi, we get the impression that Shvius is connected to Yovel. And Yovel is not Do'oraisa in our time. No way, no how. And that's based on a technical reason called Rov Yoshvel Leo, or Kol Yoshvel Leo, which we don't have today. So there's a gigantic... What do you say?
Another thing I want to say is I have a lemon tree, which is going to be hepher in Shemitah, so anyone who wants a lemon, just come over to my house.
Great, sweet. Great. It's not so sweet, but you know, I think I think we could say that the rose is
yeah, rose. I also do have a rose bush.
Yeah,
rose
is also going
to
be sweet.
So you mentioned that we, like, do we as consumers have to figure out or decide if what we're buying is Shvius or not?
Absolutely.
It's not
because,
like...
Because again, if you're a consumer and you're buying something in the market that has Kedusha Shvius, for example, if a Jew in Bnei Brak buys something that was grown by Arabs here in the land, I'm just giving you that example, or for that matter, a Jew in Yerushalayim buys oats or beit din. Again, the idea of oats or beit din is that you're not going to pay the full value of the fruits. You're going to just pay for the beit din and all the workers that work on behalf of beit din to gather the fruits, you know, to harvest them and package them and bring them to your, to make it accessible to you. That's, you're going to, it's like cut price, cut for, you know. But now you're walking home with vegetables that have Kedusha Shvius. You have to know that, because you have to treat those vegetables with Kedusha Shvius.
So if we go to like Supersol, it's required by us, like it's incumbent on us to question?
Right, you take a look at the Hechsher and they'll tell you what it is. If it's got Kedusha Shvius, it'll say on it, Otsar Beitin. Okay? If it doesn't have Kedusha Shvius, it'll say Yibul Nachri. And again, that's only for Yerushalayim. I'm not going to talk about Bnei Brak because Yibul Nachri is not enough of a shtempel to allow you to assume that it has no Kedusha Shvius. Once you know that it has Kedusha Shvius, you got to treat it as such. Now, people have asked me the question about their local gardens. I mean, you mentioned it, that you, Jonathan, you have a garden. If you have a garden, the laws of Shvius apply. Now, it's a little bit different than if you're a professional farmer, because obviously, in the case of your garden, you're not, well, I shouldn't say obviously, but in most cases, you're not there selling your produce. You're not marketing it, and therefore the Iser of li'achla v'lo l'schora doesn't kick in. But on the other hand, it's interesting, the malachos of Shvius, and on a Doraisa level, there are five categories of malachos, whether it be planting, whether it be harvesting, whether it be pruning, whether it be hoeing the land, what's it called, harisha in English, how do you say it?
Plowing
the land. All those are Doraisa, they apply in a garden as well. But then, besides the five malachos Doraisa, which are called the avos, we have toldos. Toldos means subcategories. For example, zibul, which means adding fertilizer. Or, for example, hashka'a, which means watering or irrigating the land. Those are malachos dirabbanan. Those are only rabbinic. And even though we have to be careful about them, we're allowed to violate these rabbinic laws in our time, because most poskim assume that Shvius in our time is Durabbanon, so we have a double Durabbanon, but I have to add another proviso. It's got to be in order to save what's in the garden. Meaning, if you can testify, so to speak, I don't mean that literally, but if you can declare that if I don't water this garden, if I don't weed this garden, because weeding also comes up with Durabbanon, I'm not talking about zomer, where I cut off branches. I'm talking about getting rid of the weeds. Or, for example, zibul, which means that, let's say, for example, you have bugs. And these bugs are going to develop. I don't know if, have you experienced that? We have, in our backyard, we own, I wouldn't say a whole carom, but we have grapes growing. If you don't grab those grapes or bag them, you know, on time, forget it. They're gone. The same is even true for rimonim. Mm-hmm. Even pomegranates. A lot of people in this country have pomegranates growing in their backyard. I'm not the only one. And pomegranates, you leave them too long. So all these malachot that we do, which are not d'oraisa, we're not planting during Shvius, not our garden. We're not plowing. We're not harvesting. What we're doing is, and I'll get back to harvesting in just one moment, but what we're doing is malachos d'rabbanan. And we're doing them only explicitly, expressly because we're afraid if we don't do so, it's going to ruin what's growing in our backyard. And this is going to be true for flowers. I don't know if any of you are growing flowers in your backyard. You can do what you have to do in order to prevent them from dying.
Why does Shvius apply to flowers?
Because flowers are nitan l'reach. They have a perfume smell. Now, if you have a flower which has no purpose whatsoever, it cannot be used neither as perfume. Or now, wait a minute.
It just looks nice.
Yeah. Looks nice is not enough to engender Kedusha Shvius, because that's not considered Hanaso Biuro Shava, which is, again, is a different concept. But take, for example, what's the status of the wood? In other words, I grow a tree. And let's say, for argument's sake, I plant the tree right before Shvius, and it grows during Shvius. So the fruits of that tree will be Shvius. But what about the bark of the tree? So the bark of the tree, even though it could be used as firewood, is not Kodesh B'Kedusha Shvius. So therefore, getting back to your question about flowers, if you have flowers growing, if the flowers can be used for smelling, for reach, then they have Kedusha Shvius. If they can't be used for smelling, you might ask me, but, you know, let's say the flower grows from a stem, and the stem itself could be theoretically used, but for firewood, that doesn't engender Kedusha Shvius. So as I say, when it comes to Tipul Beginot, and he's got a whole section here in this little book about Tipul Beginot. Again, I would photocopy for you if you need it. And he says that you're only allowed to do that kind of stuff in your garden during Shvius, which will prevent, you know, the destruction of the growth.
And we still have to take Truman Meiser on Kedusha Shvius.
Kedusha Shvius is potter from Truman Meiser. So if you're convinced that what you have is Kedusha Shviyas, like for example the case of Otzer Beis Din, you have no problem with Kedusha Shviyas.
Nowadays, usually when Shemitah starts, the fruits and vegetables become more expensive, usually.
I don't understand why fruits should become more expensive. Vegetables, again, have Kedusha Shviyas. Fruits are not going to have Kedusha Shviyas for a long time. So in the case of vegetables, because of all the laws of, number one, Otzer Beis Din, which is a complicated business. Number two, because it's produced by Nochri, you know, all these laws might somehow impact on the price. Addition to that, you know, Hashgacha, you know, to make sure that this is a good supervision, rabbinic supervision, that can also add to the price. You know, this is a very, you know, a hot political issue here in this country, you know, about why is it that you have Hashgacha and all of a sudden the price jumps up. I'm not getting into the politics of it, that's not my my position, but what I think you have to be careful about is making sure that you have a good Hashgacha.
You're still on the issue of Arla, right? The tree is not 3 years old.
So right. Again, I think if you have hashgacha, you know, you're not, you don't have to worry about Arla.
Yeah,
you know, it's Arla is pretty rare today because the Gemara says that we can rely on Rov when it comes to Arla. And most of the fruits that are on the market today are not Arla. I mean, you'd have to really sort of do a somersault in the air to get yourself Arla. But I wanted to ask you one other question, which I think is very important. You know, there's something that you'll hear about over and over again called the Heter Mechira. And the truth is that the Heter Mechira, the more I read about it, it does not have a leg to stand on. Now, it's Rav Kook, the first chief rabbi of Palestine, was the one who instituted it at a time where it was absolutely a dire necessity for the yeshuv to exist. But the truth is, as soon as you get even into the tip of the lumbus of what Shviyas is all about, you realize that the Heter Mechira is virtually unacceptable. And I'll tell you why. The Heter Mechira is based on the following concept. Number one, that we paskin like the Beit Yosef, and that means that even though the fruits and the grains were grown here in Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless, it's not owned by Jews. That's the first premise. So that itself, as I told you, is a big machlokas, but we're okay with that because we're going to follow the Beit Yosef. But then we get into a more fundamental issue. And this is a conceptual issue of the highest order. Can we really get together and sell the land of Israel? So, for example, I can sell maybe my portion, you know, dalit al dalit. But the concept of Heter Mechira means that the whole of Eretz Yisrael is being sold. And I once heard from Rav Soloveitchik, my Rebbe, he said that if every single Jew on the map of Israel we gathered together to sell the land, we still couldn't sell the land. The land doesn't belong neither to you nor to me nor to the entire amalgamation of all the Jews living in any particular moment in time. Our ownership of the land of Eretz Yisrael goes back to the time of Avraham Avinu, Kuvit Halech Baretz, La'arka L'rochba, and so forth and so on. We have what we would call a metaphysical ownership of the land of Israel. It cannot be sold. You can't take the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael and poof, just completely do away with it. So the concept of Heter Mechira is very difficult. If, for example, you get invited to someone's house and they rely on the Heter Mechira, then I think for your practical benefit, you have to treat the fruits as if they were sanctified with Kedusha Shviyas. The only problem is what we're going to discuss at a different occasion if you're ever interested, and that's called Svichen. Because, for example, if let's say someone relies on the Heter Mechira, then chances are that those fruits come under the Iser of Svichen. So that's why it's going to be a big mess, you know, when that happens. But again, as I say, almost any supermarket that's worth its salt, again, in certain areas there are less religious people, so it's more rare to find such a supermarket, but there are known supermarkets. For example, in my neighborhood where I live, which is Givat Shaul, you'll find Rami Levi, you know, you have no problem with anything there. All you'll see the big signs of the Shemitah. For example, if you go to what's it called? Also near Har Nof. Osher Ad, and then now they're building an Osher. I don't know if you heard about it. Osher Ad is moving to, I think it's called Baca. I don't know exactly the name of the neighborhood. No, maybe it's Talpiot. I should say Talpiot because
right,
it's
to the Hadar Mall.
Hadar Mall. So that's already Talpiot. It's so close to. It's so close to where I work most of my waking hours that I think it's Baca, but it's really the next neighborhood over. It's Talpiot. It's literally walking distance from the Emek Learning Center. And that's going to be all, you know, with all Ashkachos. So there's almost no one in Yerushalayim who's too far to find a place where he can get a hold of fruits that have Ashkacha. And again, in the event that you're relying, which is no problem at all. When I say relying, don't misunderstand me. I mean, say if you're purchasing oats or beitin, then you really have to be very careful with the fruits. I mean, there's no problem buying the fruits. On the contrary, you may even, according to Ramban, get a mitzvah every bite that you eat of Peros Shviyas, but you have to be very careful. You can't just throw them in the garbage. You can't just let them rot. So if you have leftovers, which you go Sheiriot Ochel, then you let them rot until finally they're so rotten that you just want to get rid of them.
I can feed them to my dog.
Absolutely. Yeah, and not only can you feed them to your dog, you should be feeding them to your dog. You know, I'm not a big dog fan, that's the truth. But when it comes to Shviyas, I love dogs. I mean, you know, I changed my whole philosophy for 1 year. Yeah.
They love vegetables. I don't know if they eat vegetables.
I don't know, we have to ask the expert.
Heifer eats cooked zucchini, but not raw. Raw carrots occasionally, but not tomatoes.
Okay. Well, look, raw carrots you can't feed to your dog. So don't even dream of that. On Shviyas, I'm sorry. Because raw carrots have to be fit for human consumption. Wait a minute, Jonathan. I hope you didn't misunderstand me. When I'm a fan of dogs on Shviyas, I'm talking about stuff that you can't eat.
What about stuff that's just leftovers?
Again, when you say leftovers, why aren't you eating them? If they're spoiled, you know, I don't know what the word leftovers means. You know, leftovers means that you're so full in your belly that you don't eat it. That's not leftovers as far as halacha is
concerned. It's like the scrapes from someone's plate. Like you're hosting a Shabbos meal.
Okay, but I'm just saying if it's so disgusting to you that you determine and you declare it's not fit for human consumption, feed it to your dog. And that's great. You know, I don't have any issues with chicken because chicken, you know, you want to feed the bones to the dog, but that doesn't have Kedusha Shviyas to it. Kedusha Shviyas only applies to peros and to vegetables and so on. Okay, Rabosai, so anyone...
Do we have to be worried about like, I guess...
Wait, Aaron, I want to make an announcement here, and I've made this announcement a dozen times, and I want to make it again. Our time has expired. The shiur is over. Get the heck out of here. I'm throwing you out. Go back to Clyde. If there's anyone who, for whatever reason, again, I have to ask Rav Asher if they have the head to stay on, and they're interested, then please stay on. But the shiur is officially finito, because I've gotten all these complaints that I go overtime and everything. So yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so do we have to be worried here about buying, say, like, potato chips or Bisley, that the contents of it are Kedusha Shviyas?
Yeah, but not now. I think that's good. I can look up the charts for you, but that's going to come up a little bit later.
You have to like finish like every last Dorito and every last, like, really.
Well, I don't know if there's such a thing as Doritos of Otzer Beitin, but what you'll have is Doritos of Heter Mechira.
Uh-huh.
And if I were you, I would avoid that because, again, there's going to be issues of...
But they'll say it on there? Like, it'll be like,
yeah, Doritos. They'll say Heter Mechira.
I have some now. This is from Rosh Hashanah. This is Heter Mechira.
Oh, wow.
It's a lot of them. Somebody has a question. Somebody asked me to buy something from Kutlaritz. It was about $13. I forgot, brought it back. They got the item, but they didn't have exact change on them. They didn't, so I said, you'll give me change later. If when Rosh Hashanah comes down, was I shavaliach for them?
Well, first of all, I just want to say this, Max. It probably is not relevant to this Rosh Hashanah. It's relevant to next Rosh Hashanah because
the end of Shmita.
We paskin that so far. We do a prusbul because of those shitas that say that there's Shmita now. But halacha lemaisa. Okay, so now you want to know if he owes you change? Yeah, I think that should be a chov. Offhand, I don't see a reason why not. If you want to write it to me in an email, I'll think it over again. But just shooting from the hip, I don't see why that should be any different than any other debt. Okay. I mean, he never actually got the money from you, but he owes you that debt because you shelled out the money on his behalf.
Right.
And there's a whole sugya in Kiddushin called Mekudeshes Midin Orev. Are you familiar with that? Which means that I can actually be Mekadesh and Isha for you without you appointing me as your shliach by giving you money. Yeah.
It's because of your benefit.
So that's what happened over here. You bought something even without being appointed as a shliach. The money really has to be reimbursed to you, and that's a full-fledged
offer. Sure,
full-fledged
for it.
In terms of flowers, I want to buy flowers for my wife, Erev Shabbos. What do I do?
So I don't. Again, I don't think there'll be a problem now. You're talking later on in the year. I'll tell you exactly.
You know, flowers already is the time they're picking.
Yeah. I don't think so. I could double check on that. I think that prachim are much later on. Give me just a minute to check that out. I should have it right here in front of me.
Right.
I think they have the din of Paris Eilon. Let's just see if I'm right. Where is it?
Because you want an excuse not to buy flowers, or you want to buy flowers?
My wife gave me a heter. She says you only have to buy me flowers during Shmita. She did say that. My shelf isn't.
Let me just read to you two or three paragraphs. He says, first of all, with regard to ginot non, he says, with regard to gardens, he says, mutar lahashkot, you're allowed to irrigate them, to water them, avol rak kedei limnoa nezek, in order to prevent damage. Okay, that's one paragraph I wanted to call to your attention. Then he says, zibul, which means to add fertilizer, b'shnat ha-shmita mutar, again he says, b'makom, this is five pages later, but b'makom, shim lo yaseh zot yigorem nezek nikar.
I'm not talking about flowers in my garden.
Okay, no, I understand. Since you mentioned flowers, I just think this is very relevant. You know, I wanted to mention this. He says the following. He says that k'tifat prachim b'shvi'it l'tzorch kishut, to cut down flowers in order to beautify the house, I guess, or wherever you're beautifying it, muteret, is allowed. Afal pishe ze gorem l'famim l'gidul nosaf, even though it's going to cause an increase in the productivity, I guess you'd say, of the flower. Gizum is l'matarat hashpacha or l'shem noy. He says, if it's l'matarat hashpacha, so you're cutting it down so that it will produce more, he says that's osur. Im l'matarat noy, he's cutting it down for beauty purposes, that he's allowed to do. So I think this answers your question, Aaron, from before, that sometimes you cut down, let's say, flowers that are growing in the garden, and it now produces more, so it might come under Zomer. Mm-hmm. And he says, no. As long as you're doing it l'shem noy, because you want the flowers to beautify, you're not interested in the increasing the productivity, then it's okay. Now we get to Jonathan's question about the status of flowers.
By the same guy, I buy flowers from every week.
Right.
He's so disappointed. He's disappointed whenever I walk by and I'll buy flowers.
Right. So there's Beinodim Lechaveru here too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kuf Ayin He. Let's see if I can find it again. It's massive, you know, the amount of. I'll see Aaron, call to.
Yeah, thanks.
Kuf Ayin He.
Awesome, sure, Rabbi. Are we going to continue next week? More Shmita? Or?
It's up to you. I mean, you go ahead, please, just notify me in advance, you know. He says the following. Kol tzemach sheyesh lo shoresh ba'aretz, as long as it has roots in the ground, v'hanato bi'oro shaver. Okay, we'll see the exception of the bark of the tree itself. Af she'eno omed l'achila, even though it's used for other purposes, noeg bo kedusha shvius. Okay, so anything that grows from the ground, and therefore tabak, kevan shanato bi'oro shaver yesh bo kedushat shviit. Meaning, whereas in the case of trees, of wood, you have to destroy them and consume them in order to benefit from them, to produce this. He says, kol minei kvisa, the different kinds of soaps that are grown from the ground, kivorit va'ohel chala aleim kedusha shvius, even though they're not edible. Okay. Prachim shomdim l'reach v'shoshanim. I don't know why shoshanim, that's not a perach. I don't know why he has it in a separate category. Yesh linhog behem kedushat shviit. V'chein linyan isus sfichim. Wow. That means there's an isus sfichim with regard to prachim. And that's what we're going to have to...
What that means next week.
Next week. But that's... Sfichim is... That's a doozy. But he writes the following. Yesh mekilim b'shviit b'zman hazeh l'inyan sfichim. And he says that even though we don't rely on that kula, he says, Bizmanenu shikram l'noi, since we really grow flowers for noi purposes, to beautify them, is therefore, yesh omrim she'ein bem kedusha shvius. Avol pirchei noi she'einam l'reach, he says that if you have these beautiful flowers and they don't have any good smell to them, and that's all you appreciate is the colors, I guess, the beauty of the flower, or just aesthetic beauty of the flower, is l'kuli alma ein b'hem kedusha shvius v'lo isur sfichin.
I never smell any flowers.
So again, I don't know if it depends on you, but if the flowers don't have a good smell to them, then you have no problem whatsoever. But again, I think that's rare. You know, he's talking about, I think, something that's very rare, that you have flowers that are beautiful and they beautify the home, but they don't have any good smell. They're not perfume. But if you find such a thing, there's no Kedusha Shvius. But if you have flowers that have a good smell to them, then according to most opinions, they have Kedusha Shvius. However, he says, there are those who say that they're mutter. And he seems to be inclined to rely on that shita. If it's ikron linoi. So
I'm just buying from some guy on the street. He doesn't have any tooth. I just, you know, he steps up on a stand.
Right. So you have to ask yourself the following question. Most people, you have to tap the average guy. You have to take a census.
Yeah.
The average guy on the street, why does he buy these flowers? Meaning, let me explain. I'm assuming that the flowers are grown in order to satisfy the consumer.
Yeah.
That's my premise. So now, what is the consumer interested in? If he basically is interested in beautifying his home, like you come to a Shabbos table and there are beautiful flowers and everyone enjoys the flowers, they enhance the ambiance, then he says, Yesh Omer Lekul, that there's no Kedusha Shvius. So it's mamish like buying fruits that came from New York, you know. Even though they smell good. But most people buy it not for the smell. They may smell it from here and there, but their primary use and benefit is not.
That's how I would interpret it.
I think that this heter, again, he's not.
I would not be surprised if you spoke to a flower farmer, mm-hmm. and he would say, obviously, we've been selecting for visual beauty for years.
Right.
And like, we don't select the smelliest flowers, we select the
right.
prettiest flowers.
If somebody's making Avdola and he doesn't have the salmon, he'll grab the flower maybe. But
maybe.
But that's not really why he bought it. He bought it because it's beautiful. You know, I have an interest in art. If you go back to what's called still life, you know, back to the time of the golden age of art in the Netherlands, you know, in Holland, you know, what did the painters do? They painted flowers. And this most incredible paintings. There are people who believe that it's more beautiful than a photograph. It's incredibly beautiful. You heard of Vermeer?
There's some controversies that there's some people that think that they cheated.
Magic.
Lenses. No, they use like
lenses.
And
there was a school of thought that thought that they were using magic. Could you believe it or not? 5 centuries ago. But the point is that I think you're right that he's talking about flowers that are basically ikar. Let me get you something. Ikram linoi. That's our flowers. Yesh omrim she'ein b'hem kedusha
shvius. Even grown in Eretz Yisrael by Jewish farmers on Shmita.
No problem. Why? Because it's ikram linoi ein b'hem kedusha shvius. On the other hand, if you have a flower, which again I don't know, maybe there are such flowers that are ikram lireach. Reach is a classical kedusha shvius.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you.